Why is climate change so hard to address? Reducing the amount of carbon in the atmosphere is a huge economic, political, and technical challenge, of course. But it's also a narrative problem, according to the author Peter Friederici. Peter is a professor at Northern Arizona University and the author of several books about nature and the environment. In his new one, he says we're telling ourselves the wrong story about climate change and suggests some surprising new ways to change the narrative. Here he is with five big ideas from Beyond Climate Breakdown, envisioning new stories of radical hope.
I'm Peter Friederici. I'm a journalist and a professor of science communication, and most recently the author of the new book, Beyond Climate Breakdown. Though the book is about the climate crisis we're facing, I'm not a climate scientist. I think of myself as more of a story scientist, someone who examines how stories are formed and how those forms affect what we do with those stories. The particular stories I'm most interested in revolve around climate change, or climate breakdown, as I've taken to calling it. The signs that a safe, habitable climate is breaking down are proliferating around the world. Yet governments and other powerful entities have been really slow to deal with this enormous threat to our future. Why is that? To me, the answers lie in our practice of story, in how we shape narratives to explain the world, and how we often stick to those narratives even as they make less and less sense. That's what I explore in my book. Let's take a look at my five main findings. Insight 1. Stories have shapes. First is that all stories have shapes. Let's say we run into one another on the sidewalk this evening and I blurt out, "You'll never believe what happened today." Depending on the mood you see in me, you'll pretty quickly figure out what sort of story is coming. Is it tragic, like a car crash or bad medical diagnosis? Someone getting fired? Is it a funny story? Maybe even a ridiculous joke? Is it a new social media outrage? These are all different types of stories that demand different responses. And in our everyday lives, we're really good at picking out the cues that tell us what kind of story is coming. Those cues then determine whether we should respond with a laugh, or a sympathetic smile, or a gasp. They tell us how to integrate the new information within our existing worldview. The shape of stories is what climate breakdown is about. It shows that as good as we are at figuring out the shapes of stories coming from people in our everyday lives, we are remarkably bad at detecting the shape of large-scale narratives that are shared in a society. And it's because we're uncritical about the shape of climate breakdown stories in particular that progress on what many agree is humankind's most pressing problem has been so achingly slow. Let's look at what some of those stories are. Or let's call them narratives, by which I mean widely disseminated story frames that rest on shared and often unquestioned assumptions. Insight 2. Climate change narratives are broadly shared. Here's my second point. A limited number of story shapes have characterized mainstream narratives around climate change. When we're faced with complicated situations, humans have a tendency to reach for prepackaged stories that can help us understand. We tend to reach for the stories that fit our existing worldview. On the surface, it seems like this results in stories that approach the topic in very different ways. Most notoriously, there's denial, or a stance that says climate change can't be happening or that it isn't linked to human activities. It says that humans can't change the Earth's climate to any significant degree, or that what's happening now is no different than so-called natural climate change that has happened in the past. An offshoot of this is the religious fundamentalist narrative that says climate change is God's work. A 2016 poll showed that 14% of Americans say that climate change is probably a sign of the biblical end times, and another 18% weren't really sure. That's a third of the electorate who probably won't place the climate high on their list of priorities. Still others believe that climate breakdown is an occasion to make money, which is certainly true. Change brings opportunity, even when its overall impact is negative. One version of this storyline that seems promising on the face of it is so-called green growth, which is based on the idea that we can invent and innovate our way to a climate-friendly society without having to make major sacrifices in our way of life. But the technical and pollution hurdles to this are huge. Finally, a major emerging climate breakdown narrative is proliferating fast, especially among young people. It's despair. The sinking feeling that humans simply can't deal with the problem fast enough or in a big enough way to assure a livable future. A global survey in 2021 found that more than 45% of people 25 and under report that climate anxiety affects their daily functioning. Insight 3. These narratives are all shaped like tragedies. On the face of it, these narratives seem very different. They even contradict one another. But in a very important way, they have a similar structure. They're all tragedies in the sense that the ancient Greeks meant when they developed the roots of our Western literary traditions dozens of centuries ago. What characterizes a tragedy is that the conditions that begin the story can't be changed later. A classic example is the story of Oedipus, who in his youth hears a prophecy that he will kill his father and marry his mother. He doesn't want that. So he structures his life to avoid that fate. But what happens? His elaborate efforts themselves make the prophecy come true. In what way are our shared climate change narratives tragic? They all have embedded in them pre-existing conditions and the assumption that those conditions can't change. In the case of denial, the assumption is that humans can't do anything consequential enough to change the global climate. In the case of green growth, the assumption is that the economy has to keep growing no matter what. A number of U.S. presidents have said this very thing about climate change, beginning with George H.W. Bush, who 30 years ago said, quote, "The American way of life is not up for negotiations," before the Earth Summit in Rio. That prevailing attitude hasn't changed much. The despair narrative also is tragic, because it assumes that individuals and societies can't change quickly enough to make a difference. As a result, it implies there's not much reason to try. That's a recipe for anxiety and for giving up. Insight 4. Tragic story frames limit the range of action. My fourth insight links back to how those narratives are created and kept alive. On a planet with finite resources, it seems obvious that a narrative about perpetual economic growth should have become outdated by now. And it has. But the narrative itself remains immensely powerful. That's because of another quality of tragedy that revolves around who gets to make consequential decisions. Who decided that Oedipus would be cursed? Who made the narrative rules? The author of the play, that's who. In this case, the dramatist Sophocles, who fed off older folktales. Shared climate change narratives, of course, don't have a single author, but they are shaped and kept alive by a limited number of authors, namely powerful interests in politics, business, and the media. Together, they shape public conceptions of what is economically feasible, or, as the phrase goes, politically possible, even when those conceptions work counter to our long-term interests. A great example of this is our economy's ongoing use of coal, oil, and gas, which executives at the companies that extract them have long known to be highly destructive. But they've worked really hard to craft the narrative that there's no good alternative to their use. And this narrative is powerful enough that during the 2016 presidential campaign, the practice of rolling coal, or retrofitting pickup trucks, to produce maximum smoky emissions became a symbol of political support for candidate Donald Trump. Insight 5. Comedy offers alternatives that tragedy can't. That brings me to my final point, which is that even if what we might call zombie narratives of tragedy are very powerful, they aren't all powerful. The ancient Greeks distrusted the considerable power of the tragic narrative and developed a countervailing storytelling tradition. We call it comedy. It might offer a way out, even out of the unprecedented situation in which humans now find themselves. Unlike tragedy with its tight constraints, comedy is highly adaptive. It can deal with new realities because it can improvise. Comedy is the literary form in which the jester can make fun of the king, where men and women dress up as one another, where the lines between humans and animals blur, where established power structures don't always prevail. Comedy isn't always funny, though jokes and laughter are powerful tools for getting through tough situations. But what comedy always does is adapt, improvise, get through. And in the real world, there are lots of examples of comic approaches. One of the best is biological evolution itself, which never says no to any possibilities. In evolution, genetics tries out lots of approaches. Some work, some don't. But the overall goal stays the same, the continuation of healthy, diverse life. It's worked for a long time, even through episodes of mass extinction and other profound changes. By adopting storytelling approaches that incorporate ideals of comedy, maybe we can develop approaches to climate breakdown that are democratic, adaptive, and less strongly tied to the inertia of decisions made in the past. Maybe one of the oldest of stories, namely the way that life has continuously adapted to deal with new problems, can help guide us into a future of hope rather than despair.
Thank you, Peter. That was Peter Friederici with 5 big ideas from Beyond Climate Breakdown. You might also want to check out our book bite for Speed and Scale, an action plan for solving our climate crisis now by John Doerr. I'm Michael Kovnat. Thanks for listening.